You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Welcome to this episode of the Disease Du Jour podcast. I'm your host, Carly Sisson, and in this episode, Dr. Lauren Schnabel joined the podcast to discuss cellulitis and lymphangitis. This episode of Disease Du Jour is brought to you by Equithrive. Dr. Schnabel is a professor of equine orthopedic surgery in the Department of Clinical Sciences at NC State College of Veterinary Medicine. She completed her DVM, large animal surgery residency, and PhD at Cornell University. She is board certified in both the American College of Veterinary Surgery and the American College of Veterinary Sports Medicine and Rehabilitation. Dr. Schnabel's research focuses on stem cell immunology, use of biologic therapies to treat musculoskeletal injuries and diseases, and advancing equine rehabilitation protocols. Welcome, Dr. Schnabel.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Of course. I'm really excited to tackle this topic with you. I know that it can be a little bit of a complicated one. To get us started, can you explain how you differentiate cellulitis from lymphangitis?
Yeah, absolutely. But I'll caveat with that they can be very hard to distinguish from each other, especially in the early stages. So maybe we'll start just by going through some basic definitions and stuff too. So cellulitis is really inflammation or infection of the subcutaneous tissues. So that space, the subcutaneous tissues just under the skin. And then lymphangitis refers to specifically inflammation or infection of the lymphatic vessels themselves. So that's really the difference between the two. However, sometimes the legs look remarkably similar. So when I think of, you know, full-blown lymphangitis, it's usually what we call like a tree trunk limb or a very, very large limb from all the way from the coronary band to the top of the leg, often the hind limbs. And they can sometimes be so severe that they actually are leaking lymphatic fluid or what we call serum from the limbs. Cellulitis can start much more, you know, less severely than that. And it can be just the distal limb. It's often associated with a wound or an abrasion. It doesn't have to be, but often it is. So when we see sort of distal limbs and cellulitis occurs on the forelimbs a lot as well, when it's more minor and starting on the distal limbs or there's a wound involved, then we're thinking more cellulitis. But where things get tricky is if cellulitis progresses, they can look very similar, and cellulitis can also lead to lymphangitis. So if you have a horrible cellulitis that's left untreated for a time or not responding appropriately to treatment, then the lymphatic vessels can actually scar as part of that process, and the horse can be prone to lymphangitis in the future. So it can be really tricky to differentiate. And I'm sure we'll get more into that with the different questions. Some other things, you know, sort of when I'm taking a history about a case is just asking, has this ever happened before? Lymphangitis, horses are certainly prone to having recurrence because their lymphatic vessels are scarred or abnormal. And then there are certain breeds that are really predisposed to lymphangitis or lymphedema, especially the draft breeds, and that can include cob-type horses and Frisians as well. So those are some clues that can kind of help you differentiate the two.
Right. What is it about those draft breeds and those pony breeds that makes them more predisposed? Does it have to do with their feathering or their conformation?
Some of it seems to be true genetics. I think there are some studies looking at that. It seems quite complicated trying to tease out the genetics. But I do think it's their skin, the feathers. So, you know, on draft horses, like how thick that skin is around their pasterns. And the feathers, you know, that the hair on there makes them predisposed to trapping some bacteria. But at the same time, I mean, I've had draft breeds, you know, that are impeccably maintained, like the owners could not do a better job of taking care of those horses, and they can still suffer from this disease. So I think it's probably multifactorial of genetics and then environmental and management. And oftentimes you do have to clip the feathers to kind of keep things under control or get that bacterial infection under control.
Right. Are there any other management factors that might predispose a horse, you know, maybe the footing that they're turned out on or just anything that owners might overlook?
So specifically the lymphangitis horses, once they've been diagnosed with that, I think a couple of things, they really have to keep moving as much as possible and to help with the lymphatic flow. So I know it sounds crazy, but the drive for the lymphatic fluid in the limbs is actually through the frog. Like you have pressure on the bottom of the frog on the foot. That stimulus of that pressure is help what drives fluid. So if the horses are just standing for long periods of time, they're going to have a problem, especially if they already have a compromised lymphatic system. And then there's other devices, bandages, kind of almost like tights or stockings in people that we use for lymphatic drainage that we can talk about too, or compression socks in people is another analogy. But those horses are going to need help once they have an issue. The footing is not so much, it's more that they're just not moving enough. There is some footing that can be abrasive for things when we're talking about cellulitis or track surfaces. Sometimes are bacteria, like in thoroughbreds, they can get predisposed to cellulitis just by like being on those surfaces or those materials being on their legs. But I think there's other factors that would probably play into it more.
What is your current diagnostic approach for these cases to help you start to narrow down between cellulitis, lymphangitis, or maybe some other differentials that could be confused?
Yeah, absolutely. So that always a thorough history and physical exam. And then we'll talk a little bit more about diagnostic imaging. But I think, you know, as far as the cellulitis, like any history of trauma or a wound or anything like that, and then looking at the leg for those. Lymphangitis, they can also, if it's multiple legs, so one leg or multiple legs, if it's multiple legs, obviously we think about things, or I shouldn't say obviously, but we think about things like genetic predisposition, or the horse has had an insult to its immune system. And that can be from things like reaction to vaccines or from having a virus, and they can actually get lymphangitis in multiple legs that way. And that actually happened to one of my own horses pretty badly, versus vaccines in this country. And had lymphangitis and vasculitis in all four legs and sloughed a lot of skin, and it was a mess. But he's fine now, but a very scary thing to have happen as an owner, of course. So, you know, so those are some things in the history along with the breed that can give you some clues as to trying to differentiate the two. And then we always, you know, any case like that, we do radiographs to check, especially if there's any history of a trauma on the limb, but to make sure there's not something more insidious going on with the bone underneath or a foreign body or something like that. So check radiographs, especially if the horse is really lame. And then ultrasound is really key. So the cellulitis cases are going to have very thick subcutaneous tissues with fluid in them. And they can also get focal abscessation or abscess pockets under the skin that need to be opened and drained sometimes in the more severe cellulitis cases. And there's published studies, and we've certainly seen a lot of cases here where they tend to get abscesses sometimes around the suspensory ligament branches. So that's something we always look for on ultrasound. The lymphangitis cases are going to have very dilated lymphatic vessels. So those vessels are huge. And there's not appropriate flow. And if you trace them up, you'll find enlarged lymph nodes as well, higher up. So those are things that can really help. And then, you know, only, and both of those can be done in the field or in the hospital. In the hospital setting, some other things that we'll sometimes use for chronic cases is, so probably people have heard of bone scan or nuclear scintigraphy, like how we use it in orthopedics. You know what I mean by that with bone scan? But we can actually switch the tracer. So normal bone scan for orthopedic cases, we inject technetium 99, but it's attached to a bisphosphonate in their vein. And that goes to active bone turnover to help us see where things are inflamed. There's a different radioisotope. It's still technetium 99, but it's actually attached to what's called sulfur colloid. And we just inject it under the skin above the coronary band, and it actually follows the lymphatic vessels, which is really cool. So that's called lymph scintigraphy or lymphoscintigraphy. And we can see the clearance through the lymph nodes. So we have done that before for a couple of different things. One, in draft horses, to actually see if they even have any lymphatic flow in those chronic cases, if they are actually able to reach the lymph nodes. And then we've used it to also evaluate new therapies for treating lymphangitis cases. So we can come back to that in the therapy section, but that it is a pretty cool technique. It's not something we're going to do really on acute cases, but if you have a horse that's struggling with lymphangitis, it does help you determine sort of what kind of flow they have in those legs. Yeah.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I hadn't heard of that before. This podcast is brought to you by Equithrive. Vitamin E is a critical antioxidant essential for horse health and performance. Yet many horses fall short due to limited pasture access or increased athletic demands. Equithrive Vitamin E pellets provide a natural, bioavailable source of vitamin E in a palatable pellet for consistent daily intake. This formulation is ideal for horses requiring targeted vitamin E supplementation to support neurologic health, muscle integrity, and exercise recovery. Equithrive Vitamin E pellets, dependable antioxidant delivery where it matters most. Use promo code DUJOUR, that's DUJOUR, to get 20% off your first order, plus free shipping at equithrive.com. What role do bacterial culture and sensitivity testing play when you're making your antimicrobial selections for these cases, especially as we're growing increasingly concerned about antimicrobial resistance?
Yes. Fantastic question. So this can be tricky for a couple of reasons, but very important to do. So when we take a sample, so that would be, you know, you want to try to get the cleanest, most representative sample. So if there is an abscess pocket under the skin, let's say for a cellulitis case, we would sample that. So we do a sterile prep. We try to get a sample from within the abscess with the needle. Our lymphangitis cases, you can take some of the serum, but you have to try to, you know, not avoid normal skin contaminants in the process of doing that. It is really important, though, especially with the cases with abscessation. When we submit that to the micro lab, it takes several days to get the culture back. That's just how the process works, right? They have to plate it on a bacterial broth and then wait for the answer. And sometimes within like 2 days, we can have a prelim. But what that means is typically for the severe cases, they're already going to be like, we can't wait till we get the results. So where the culture really comes in handy for us, especially in the hospital, and I'll talk about it in the field too, is deciding what oral antibiotics to continue on. So in the more severe cases we see here in the hospital, we'll start them on IV antibiotics, which is typically K-pen, penicillin, and then gentamicin. So broad spectrum coverage. Or we may just choose to do regional limb perfusion. That's when you have a tourniquet around the leg and you're injecting antimicrobials into the vein. And usually that's amikacin for us, which is an aminoglycoside. Some of the cellulitis lymphangitis cases, their legs are so big that you can't access the vein. And then they're only going to, the vein in the leg, and then they're going to be on jugular vein medications. But some of the cellulitises that are focused in the distal limb, you can just do IV regional limb. Then when the legs are doing better and the horses are getting ready to transition home, perhaps if they're in the hospital, we pick an oral antibiotic for them to go home on. That's where the culture is really critical for us, is choosing which of those oral antimicrobials. And in that paper that I was mentioning, actually with the suspensory branch cases of the abscesses around the suspensory branch from cellulitis, those were all Staph aureus, so Staphylococcus aureus, which is the most common bacteria isolated in these cases. But 6 out of 8 of them in this study were resistant to either penicillin or SMZs. And SMZs or TMS, trimethoprim sulfa, that's probably the most common oral antibiotic that horses go on across the board. So that was pretty eye-opening in that paper to think about, you know, TMS or SMZs probably isn't the best choice for these cellulitis cases. So they can go home on other oral antibiotics like doxycycline, minocycline, sometimes Baytril, just depending on what we get back from culture and sensitivity. But that it proves how important that is. If we just put these horses on SMZs or TMS, we're probably perpetuating that antimicrobial resistance. Yep.
Right.
That was a long answer. I hope that makes sense. No,
that makes a lot of sense. What about for vets in field settings who maybe don't have the option to do a regional lymph perfusion or long-term IV antibiotics while they're waiting for those sensitivity results?
Yeah, it is really hard. So I think it's, you know, judging if the horse truly has a severe case, you need to put them in antibiotics, and you're going to choose just the most broad spectrum coverage that you can while you wait for those culture results to come back. You know, based on what we know now about those focal abscess cases in the distal limbs around the suspensory, I wouldn't use SMZs just based on that paper. So I would choose something else. But it is a challenge, and, you know, and sometimes you have to go by what you have on the truck in the field, what the horse, you know, if the horse is terrible for oral antibiotics, sometimes you're going to choose a long-term injectable, like an Exceed product, just because you got to go with what, you know, what is feasible for that situation. And it can be tricky that way. Yeah. I think the key thing though is, you know, especially if the horse is not responding appropriately to the medications that we put the horse on initially, we need to really, like, you know, wait for these cultures, see, because there's, you know, that could be the problem for sure.
Right. Can you walk us through some of your treatment strategies, you know, systemic therapies and adjunctive options? And how does your approach differ between cellulitis and lymphangitis, and also between mild and severe cases?
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's unpackage that. So typical cellulitis case, if it came into us early, kind of with a wound and a swollen, usually it's the distal limb, but it would depend on where it is. If we can access the vein higher up in the leg, like the normal, our mainstay of treatment would be regional limb perfusion. And then, you know, cleaning of the wound, cleaning that up, and then very firm compression bandages, and sometimes icing or other things as well. And most of the horses, you know, if you catch them early and it's an uncomplicated cellulitis, they do really well and they don't kind of look back from that. If a horse comes in with a very severe cellulitis, or I really consider any lymphangitis kind of severe because the legs are so big, the horses are usually painful. So those cases, we're going to be more aggressive in some of our management, and with the cellulitis, especially putting them on IV antibiotics, and then really trying to get the leg down to a state where we can access a vein for a regional. Things that have worked really, really well for us, we're fortunate that we have a saltwater spa here. The saltwater spa is incredible for getting swelling edema out of these legs, and the horses love it. Like, it obviously feels good to them. So cold water, very heavily salted is not the right word, but, you know, the way that the osmolarity of the salts, just like in people, how we use salt water for things to get swelling out, it works incredibly well. So we try to get the horses in the spa at least once or twice a day.
Is that a treadmill that they're literally soaking in, or are you hosing them with the water?
No, so it's not a tread. We have a separate aqua tread, but the saltwater spa is a tank that they're standing in, and it has jets too that circulate the water. So it's a bit of a massage as well for the legs, which is really helpful. And the horses love it. And then we're going to focus on bandaging and pressure to get the swelling out as well once they're out of the spa. The lymphangitis horses, we also have. They do very well in the spa. There's a couple of other things for them. So the lymphangitis horses, typically, you know, you can just bandaging kind of puts this static pressure in one direction on the leg, but it doesn't help move the lymphatic fluid very much. And if the horses are painful, they can't be walking around very much in that state, but you need them moving to generate fluid up the limb. So it becomes this tricky situation. So I was fortunate to be part of a company called Vetletics, where we designed this dynamic compression device. It's called the EQ Press. It's based on the human devices on the market. So our manufacturer, Mego Affect, they make their leading manufacturer of the human devices. And basically, it's dynamic compression. So what that means is these garments that go around the horse's legs, they fill up with air, but in sequential chambers, so that it purposefully pushes fluid from the bottom, from the coronary band, up the leg. And that's been really effective. It's, you know, it is time consuming to put this device on and for owners to be committed to, but it works quite well. The really hard thing is that in people, it's almost like a full suit. They have panels that come off, like for pregnancy or other things, but it's a full suit. In the horses, we can't do that. It's their legs. So sometimes they need extra help with massage and There's unfortunately very few people that specialize in lymphatic drainage in horses. But where we get into trouble is if their lymph nodes, let's say in their inguinal region, because this is mostly the hind legs, if their lymph nodes are congested and blocked, sometimes it doesn't matter how much you push fluid up the leg if it can't ever get past that lymph node. So that is tricky sometimes. And that's why the chronic lymphangitis cases are really hard. So when we get calls for horses that have had, effusion is kind of a common signalment, and it's had this big leg for 2 years, that is very, very hard. I mean, that's a huge challenge to overcome. Often we can make them feel better, but it's almost impossible to get those legs back to, you're not going to get them back to a normal state at that point because everything is just too congested, too scarred.
Yeah. I know. I've seen photos of that product before, and it's really unique. I had a horse once that was prone to getting lymphangitis, and he would be so lame that you felt bad doing any kind of hand walking, but at the same time, you need that flow. So I think that's really a game changer for some of these really painful horses.
Yes, thank you. No, and they do really well in it. And that we did do a study that lymphoscintigraphy that I was talking about. It wasn't normal horses. It was just some of our teaching horses here. So not with damaged lymphatics, but we did lymphoscintigraphy with or without the EQ press on, and it dramatically accelerated lymphatic clearance, which was cool. Yeah.
Do you have any other unique approaches to some of these chronic or recurrent cases that you want to touch on?
I mean, I think those are the EQ press has definitely been a game changer, and then kind of trying to find some people that are, that know how to do lymphatic drainage massage in horses, but that is challenging. But, and then really like the maintenance is so important on those, lymphangitis horses, and where we still, I think, need help is filling that gap between when they're in the spa or they're in the EQ press to after it, because they need people, there's really good like compression socks, compression tights. Those are harder to find in horses and to keep them up on the leg in horses. Because to do these full limb bandages is like $120 per bandage, and you're taking them on. It gets like crazy. So we need something better for those owners to manage the in-between. And I'm still trying to figure out exactly what that is. I think there's more products coming onto the market like that, but to help support those horses because they need that in-between time for sure. Yeah.
Besides horses becoming sort of chronic cases, what are some other complications that you see surrounding these diseases?
Yeah, absolutely. So the biggest one we always worry about, whether it's cellulitis or lymphangitis, if the horse is really painful, is foundering or getting laminitis in their opposite foot. So the key things are to make them comfortable as quickly as we can. But with our therapies, with our pain management, whether that's oral NSAIDs or IV. And then for the really bad hind limb cases, we can sometimes do an epidural with an opioid, and that helps get the horses comfortable quickly because we absolutely have to protect their other foot when they're not using this leg properly. So I think a lot of our new treatment strategies, the spa, like we talked about as well, they just love that. Makes them feel better pretty quickly to get them using that leg more so they protect the other limb, because that's by far the most severe complication that we worry about. With the cellulitis cases, abscessation it can be part of it, and we have to drain the abscess, but that's no big deal. But they can slough skin and other things, but often that can heal okay. So laminitis is really the critical concern. One other thing with the cellulitis cases in particular is if they have an abscess that, goes sort of undetected or is not responding to treatment, you do have to be careful, especially on the distal limbs. A lot of the times they're very close to sterile structures like tendon sheaths, the joint. And if they breach those structures or the abscess gets into those structures, that's obviously a much bigger problem. Talking now about a septic joint or synovial structure and going to surgery. So we try to really watch those, scan the legs often with ultrasound to see if there's abscesses anywhere. Yeah.
Are there any prognostic indicators that you rely on in early in the course of disease to help you sort of inform owners about the expected recovery time and their risk of recurrence and the potential long-term impacts of the disease?
Yeah, no, great question. I think for me, the main thing is just how quickly they respond to therapy. So, there's lots of other things we can look at. Like we talked about the imaging, we can use things on blood work like fibrinogen or SAA, serum amyloid A, to see that we're getting the infection under control. But ultimately, it's like how quickly that leg is responding visually, pain-wise, et cetera. So the longer it goes unchecked or the horses aren't responding, the more we worry about them having trouble, meaning they're going to scar the lymphatics or this is going to be a recurrent issue. So, you know, we expect the horses to respond to our therapies, you know, in a couple of days. And if we don't see that happening, I'm always very concerned.
Is there anything else that you'd like to add on the topic or any other emerging therapies or research that you want to highlight? I know we've talked about a lot of the cutting edge tools that you're currently using, but I don't know if there's anything else that you left off.
Yeah, I think just, you know, I think as we understand how important rehab is more and more for everything we do in ortho and sports med, I mean, these cases, the same thing is critical. So I think, you know, cases that have a cellulitis and never look back, I don't think much changes for those horses. The lymphangitis horses or severe cellulitis cases, I think just the more proactive owners can be about keeping those horses exercised, doing some massage of the limbs, keeping some compression on, like the rehab is really critical, because the more aggressive you are about tackling this, the better it's going to be in the long term. Otherwise, you really get behind the eight ball, and then it's quite hard to treat these cases. So, you know, I think there's going to be a lot more devices coming out and things to help as well. But even just basic rehab is critical for those cases. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great point. Being proactive, definitely. Yeah. Super important.
Yes.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Schnabel, for joining us today. I'd love hearing all of your insight about this.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks. Thanks for having me.
I would like to say thank you again to Dr. Schnabel for joining us, and thank you to Equithrive for supporting this episode. And as always, thank you to all of our listeners for tuning in to Disease Du Jour. If you have any questions or suggestions for the podcast, please send me an email at csisson@equinenetwork.com.